All right, we are continuing our series, finalizing our series that we've run for a few weeks called Churchy Boulder Dash. And we can go to the next screen and see our options for today. Our word is faith. Okay, faith. And so we have several options, five this week, just because. Faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. That one sounds kind of convoluted. Probably made up by someone. B, trusting a person to keep their word. C, a great middle name for Christian kids. D, the godly things we believe. And E, a system of religious belief. Okay, so if you all reach for your buzzer at this point in time and select one of those options, or write it down, or think it, and I'm going to suggest that this week, each of those have elements of faith, elements of truth to them. So here's the thing, is that there are some words that have very narrow meanings, aren't there? A few weeks ago, for some reason, I chose to talk about autonomy. And you go, wow, I don't necessarily know what that means, but it can't mean a whole lot. You know, it's a very narrow word in regards to what it means. Faith, on the other hand, is a word that has a lot of different nuances, a lot of different meanings, and sometimes different meanings in different contexts. And so this is what we're going to be discussing today. And I think all of those are elements of them. What you might like to do is just think about what are the key words up in that list of possible definitions. So confidence is up there. Hope, assurance, trust, middle name. Godly, believe, religious. Okay. Some important words, because that's really the way we're going to go in our conversation this morning. The first word that I want us to look at actually isn't on that screen, but I think it's vital to our understanding faith. Okay? And the reason we're doing this series is because there are these words that get tossed around churches, that get tossed around amongst Christians. And we presume that everybody knows what the other person's talking about. And if you're an outsider and you've come into the church, then you don't necessarily know what that word means in any context. And if you're an insider, sometimes we think we know what people mean when they use a word, but they have one definition and we have another. And so we're actually talking at cross purposes and we're not aware of it. So what we're looking at is saying, what do we mean when we talk about faith? And the way I'm doing this is to just throw up some more words, because it's sort of a dictionary series, and so we'll just throw up some other words that I think are part of this family of words connected to faith. Okay? Because faith is so big, then I'm just sort of making this family of words that all help us understand faith a little better. And the first word I have is risk. Risk. And if we look at Hebrews 11, which was our first reading this morning, and we look at some of the names there, we see that these people took risks. Okay, these people of faith. The chapter begins with what was our first answer, A, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. And this is what the ancients were commended for. And so then it goes through and it lists these Bible characters who lived lives of faith. And it identifies them and points them out to us. The first one is Abel. And Abel didn't know it, but because he gave the right sacrifice to God in a way that pleased God, and because his brother didn't, and whether his sacrifice is wrong, his attitude is wrong, he gets angry, he kills Abel. Abel may not have been aware that he was taking a risk, but he was taking a risk in worshiping God in the right way. Noah took a risk in building an ark. And I want you to think here of just how long it was. Like, so you've worked on, what's the longest project you've worked on? You know, like Noah's at this ark for a long time. And people are laughing at him. There's a risk that he just had bad pizza the night before and he thinks he's supposed to build an ark and spends the next 100 years of his life dedicated to bad pizza. Now, we know how the story turned out. But there's risk there. Do you think he ever wondered to himself, did I hear you correctly, God? Like, this boat's not going to fit in the river. I'm not sure what you had in mind. Abram left home. Abram left home. That's risky today, but not so much. I mean, you get on an airplane, that's risky. You go to a place where you don't know anyone, that's risky. But, you know, if you have to load up the donkey and travel overland through areas where you know there are bandits who exist to rob people like you, that's more risky. Leaving home for Abram was not just packing a suitcase and hoping you got through TSA without having a unpleasant experience. I mean, he had serious risks. For instance, he didn't even know where he was going. Later on, we're told Abraham is told to sacrifice his son. Now, we know on the back end that that worked out okay, right? That God rescued him. On the front end, Abraham's like, what on earth am I doing? Like I don't know what's going to happen here. This seems crazy. And you can, I imagine him walking up that mountain and he's muttering, crazy God, crazy God, crazy God, every step of the way up that mountain. Still doing what he's told, but not understanding anything that's going on. Jacob, in the last years of his life, went down to Egypt. Knew he wouldn't be coming out of Egypt. He knew the promises that had been told to his family. He had no idea what lay ahead, how those promises would be fulfilled, how they would get their own land. And yet, he went to Egypt. Moses' parents took the risk of hiding him. Israel took the risk of passing through the Red Sea when the waters opened, hoping and praying that they wouldn't collapse as they walked. And so for there to be faith, there must be risk. Otherwise, it's not faith. Okay? You probably don't feel any risk sitting in your chair, sitting in your pew this morning. You don't need a whole lot of faith to sit there. You just do it. Because that's safe. There's no risk. You're confident in what you're, where you are, where you're sitting, in the stability of that seat. So the second word comes with risk, and that is risk of what? Oftentimes, it's risk of failure. Risk of failure. Okay. We can look at any of those Bible characters that I just said. And we could say they all had opportunities to fail. In fact, I remember once very early on in my preaching career, and I basically preached a sermon where I went through here and I said, this is wrongly named. It shouldn't be in the Bible. And my elders at the time were getting pretty nervous. And I said, all these guys don't have faith. Like, I don't know what the author was thinking. This is probably why he didn't sign his name to the letter. But that he got them wrong. These are examples of people that messed up. for the most, you know, in many instances, not examples of people who had faith. But they did fail. They did fail. And here's the thing, and I read this in a book, and I think it's a good point. Failure isn't a thing. Okay? In a sense, failure isn't an event. It's not something that exists by itself. Failure is a value that we give to something. Okay? So you know, when you go... So I played sports, and some might say my various sports careers have been failures. Okay? I just choose to look at them differently. All right? Just because I didn't get a professional contract doesn't mean that they were failures, because I assign it a different value. And so, the, you know, you've heard the examples of the light bulbs or the polio vaccinations or whatever it might be, and how people try different things. And they don't accomplish what they set out to do. And they don't accomplish it 100 times. They don't accomplish it 150 times. But on that 200th time, it works out. And it wasn't what they... It didn't work out the way they expected it. Maybe it didn't work out. You know, penicillin, the guy comes back from lunch and goes, oh, look, what's on... Well, he's a great success. His mold is fighting off the bacteria, and he's like, yes, well done, you're very successful by accident, but all those people that have been working hard and you that have been working hard, but it doesn't make them failures, it makes them learning experiences, right? Depending on how we view them. And so I think that's an important part of failure, but what's underneath that is this question of Where values come from? You see, failure is not a statement of an event, but of a value. Then where do your values come from? Who sets, who establishes your measure of success as a parent? Okay, think about that. Who, what, where establishes your measure of success as a parent? Who establishes the measure of your success as a spouse? Where do you get the idea, the standard, the level that is acceptable for your housekeeping? Or for your garden out there? Or wherever it is. Where does your level of success come from as a disciple of Christ? And I want to suggest that people of faith allow God to define what success is. People of faith allow God to define what success is. But we need faith. You see, faith is an antidote. It's a different perspective to failure, okay? Because of where our measure is established. Let me move down to the next one, which is weakness. Weakness. And you can see a trend going on here. But in Hebrews chapter 11, and I was excited to find this as I was reading on it. I want to start in verse 32. I think I have a slide here. They came up together. Okay, so we got the first one. And in verse 32, it begins with, "And what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, about David and Samuel and the prophets who through faith." And it lists all the things that these great collection of people did through faith. And then in verse 34, it has this line, through faith, these are the people whose weakness was turned to strength and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. In order to have strong faith, you first have to have personal weakness. Okay? In order to have strong faith, you first must have personal weakness. Look at the second verse up here, and that's hard to read on that screen, isn't it? But he said to me, this is God said to Paul, my grace is sufficient for you. For my power, I think the King James there says, my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. So if you don't have any weaknesses, Christ's power can't rest on you. Put that on your resume. I have a lot of weaknesses. Christ's power is really on me. No, I'm not going to tell you what they are. But that's the approach we have in the world, right? Don't tell anyone what your weaknesses are. Talk about your strength. Faith. And so we can have that same idea. We want to come in here and we want to say, well, here's my faith. Here's my example of my great faith. And the first thing we have to say is, if you're going to do that, let's talk about your great weakness. Because I can't see God at work in your life until you're willing to acknowledge this gap in your life. And then the last one in this particular little group is fear. Fear. Faith is related to fear. And so in Matthew, this is the story I read earlier, Matthew chapter 14. And we have two examples as Peter walks on the water, two examples here of fear. And the first is in verse 26. So Jesus is walking on the lake. And the disciples, when they saw him walking on the lake, reacted as any of us would. They were terrified. It's a ghost, they said. And they cried out in fear. Like, they're terrified, and just in case you didn't know, when they cried out, it was a cry of fear. It was a fearful terror. And they're in the boat. And yet they're filled with fear because of what's outside the boat. And then the second example, of course, is when Peter looks at the waves, looks at the wind in verse 30. When he saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink and cried out, Lord, save me. Lord, save me. And I want to suggest that the cry of Lord, save me is both a cry of terror and a cry of faith. Because at that moment, the only person who could possibly save him from sinking into the water and below the water was the same person who had allowed him to walk on top of the water. And so there in his moment of fear, he turns to the one he knows has faith, can help him, can rescue him, can save him. And so fear, more than anything else, I think, leads to faith. Now, I believe fear and faith are at opposite ends of the spectrum, but here's the thing, when you get out here with faith, it doesn't lead to fear. But you get out on that end of the spectrum with fear, and more often than not, it leads of faith. Lord, he cried out, save me. So they're kind of negative words that play into this idea of faith. But there are some positive words as well. Okay, so you can smile now. Oh, good. We're through all that bad stuff. And the first positive word we have here is confidence. Confidence. Hebrews chapter 11. Faith is confidence, we're told in verse 1. Confidence in what we hope for. And the reason it's confidence is because sometimes we think of faith and we think of it as something we wish for. Okay? I have faith that I'm going to lose 30 pounds of weight in the next 7 days. It's a lie, firstly. Secondly, it's some sort of wish. Okay? It's a dream. And I may have faith that somehow it's possible that if I didn't eat and I worked out 24 hours a day for the next 7 days, that that may be possible to be accomplished. And I may even set my mind that I'm going to do it. But it's a wish. There's no confidence behind that. But our faith, when we talk about it as a religious, as a Christian experience, our faith is grounded in real, in reality. It's grounded in real events. It's grounded in real people. That Jesus was a real person. That the 12 were real disciples. It's grounded in the event that Peter really walked on the water. That Jesus really rose from the tomb. And so we're not just, when we say, oh, God could make us walk on the water, we're not just saying, I wish, I dream that it was possible. We can have faith because God's done it before. Now, don't try this at home, okay? But the walking on water thing, don't try that at home. It's going to lead to trouble. But when we go through life, when we find ourselves in situations where we have to, because of fear, cry out and say, Lord, save me, we can do that because of the real people and the real events and the real ways that God has saved others that before us, whether in Scripture or in our own experience here or throughout the last church history over the last 2,000 years. It's not just a wish, oh, I hope that God will save me. I hope that God will help me. I hope that the Bible has something to do, something helpful for me. I hope that God hears my prayers. I wish, I dream, it would be nice if this were so. Our faith is something that we can be confident about. Faith is confidence in what we hope for, right? And that hope, even, is still not a wish. Hope is just something we look forward to. Okay? And so as we look forward to it, we can do so with confidence. And I think one way we can assess this in our minds is to say, it's one thing to say that we believe in God. There are a lot of people who believe in God. There's a sort of a fake religion that's been made up. And it's like the Great Spaghetti Monster. I don't know if any of you have seen this, but it's kind of like an atheist sort of thing. But on the census, at least in Australia, they ask questions about religion. I don't think they do that here in the US, but they ask questions about what's your religion. And there's a movement of people to answer Jedi. They sort of don't think that this question should be there, but they'll answer Jedi. And so Jedi is one of the big religions in Australia, apparently, based on the census. But there's also people that say, well, I have faith in the Great Spaghetti Monster that's out there, you know, floating in space. And it's sort of the way people want to say, well, there's something out there, and I don't know what it is. You know, there's a higher power, I don't know what it is. There's something that intelligent design, something got the universe started. I don't know what it is. And so some people say, well, let's just say it's the Great Spaghetti Monster. But But there are a lot of people who believe in the concept of God and the existence of a God. But faith, when we talk about confidence, faith asks, do I believe God? Okay? You see the difference there? Do I believe in God versus do I believe God? And that movement from just believing in existence to entrusting myself to that God as I believe in Him is a move of confidence and a move of faith. Because when we can say, yes, I believe what God says, we've reached a place of faith. Next word I have is obedience. Obedience is an act of faith. And in this passage, Matthew 14, we again see it twice. We see it in verse 22. Jesus told the disciples to go and get in a boat and go ahead of him, and they do that. Okay, they're leaving him behind. They don't know what the plan is, but they just do what he tells them to do. Get in the boat and go across the lake. But then oftentimes in this story, we're very critical of Peter, and I'm here to stand up for all Peters, but particularly the Apostle Peter at this time. And we say, oh, he's an impulsive sort of person. Okay, it's no surprise that Peter was the one who jumped out of the boat and walked on the water, because that's just who he is. He's such an impulsive guy. But he's a man of faith, not of impulse. And he may have more courage, but maybe he has more faith. And I know he's a man of faith, because look at this. He says in verse 28, it's not impulse that makes Peter jump out of the boat. He says to Jesus, hey, Jesus, good to see you out there on the water. Can I get your permission to come out there with you? Lord, tell me to come to you on the water. I mean, he checks. He gets permission. He gets approval. He says, is this what you want for me? And Jesus says, come. And then when Peter hears the come, he comes. And that was faith. He wasn't going to act outside of God's will by jumping out of the boat and sinking under the waves and disappearing, and that was the end. It was the 11 apostles from that point. He had faith, but his faith said, I'm going to live within the dimensions of obedience, within the dimensions of the will of God. As parents, have you ever told your child, I promise, I'm telling you to do this or don't do this because I care about you? You say, don't touch that. You can't go do there. I want you to put this away. You give them instructions, either positive or negative, and they're like, no, I don't want to do that. Maybe this is just my daughter. Don't tell her. But, you know, it's like, no, I don't want to do that. And your job, that they're convinced that they know better. Okay? Like these little children are convinced that they know better. And what you as a parent have to do, you have a couple of options. One is you just say, you do it because I told you so. But the other thing is that you say, I want you to trust me enough that when I tell you to do or to not do that, you're convinced that I'm telling you that because I care for you, because it's the best thing for you to do. That I have your best interests at heart. And the child doesn't have to like it, doesn't have to enjoy it, but if they obey, it's because it's hopefully at some point, some place deep in the recesses of their dark, rebellious heart, they can believe that you have their best interest in mind. And so when we obey, when Peter says, can I come out of the boat, and Jesus says, come, Peter does that because he knows that Jesus has his best interests at heart. He knows that he can trust God. And so faith obeys because faith trusts. Here's the last thing. And that is growth. Faith grows. I think sometimes we get ourselves in trouble with this topic because we establish a standard and we say, if you're not willing to just completely trust everything to God, all the time, from the moment you begin trusting God, if you don't trust everything to God, then your faith is weak. Your faith is maybe questionable. And so I like this passage in 2 Thessalonians, and it's real short. 2 Thessalonians and chapter 1, verses 3 and 4. And so this is just as Paul is writing to the church in the Greek city of Thessalonica. And he says this. He says, "We ought always to thank God for you, brothers and sisters." And rightly so. He says, "The reason we ought to give thanks to you is because your faith is growing more and more, and the love all of you have for one another is increasing. Therefore, among God's churches, we boast about your perseverance and faith." Well, that sounds good until we get to the last line. "In all the persecutions and trials you are enduring." I could have done without that, thank you. But faith grows. Paul accepts that as a natural thing that's going to happen. That as once we commit our lives to Christ, that we start off with this beginning faith. And we should expect that person to have beginning faith. And then we go through life and we encounter different situations, and all these situations we encounter, we're saying, how am I going to respond? Am I going to obey because I trust God to take care in this? Or am I unwilling to acknowledge a weakness in my life and I'm going to push through? And God has to say, well, actually, I know you feel so good about that, but that's a weakness you have. And we discover that in some unfortunate turn of events. But then the next time we find ourselves in that situation, we say, well, now I know that I don't have the strength to go, hopefully, we don't have to learn this too many times. So the next time we'll be optimistic that we find ourselves in that set of circumstances. We say, well, last time I tried it on my own and I didn't get anywhere, and so this time I can trust God and let's see what the difference is. And so our faith grows and it's a natural process. Now, sometimes those circumstances are persecution. Sometimes our faith grows to a place where that is the outcome of it. And we say, well, I just don't want to grow that far. I'm happy where I am. But what we're doing then is we fall into the trap of the other 11. You know whose faith we praise out of the 12 people that were in that boat when Jesus was on the water? It's not the 11 smart guys. Right? It's not the 11 intelligent, common sense guys. It's not the 11 guys who didn't take risks. It's the one who was willing to trust God to look after him, to care for him, who got out of the boat and walked on the water. And so, whatever that persecution, whatever that trial might be, it's always better to get out of the boat than to stay sitting down. But more immediately, it reminds us, this idea of growth reminds us to be patient with one another. Be patient because the people around you are growing in faith. And sometimes you look at them and we see, oh, they're struggling in that area. And we go, oh, well, their faith is weak, like a total absolute statement. Because they wouldn't go with the teens on that youth rally. And we go, well, they're not going because they've got no commitment, they've got no real faith. But in their finances, they may have total faith in God. And they may be living on a shoestring, and you don't know it, and they're just trusting God for the next paycheck because they don't have an answer for where that's coming from. And so there are different parts of our lives that grow at different paces. And as we look around at one another, we need to be patient with one another. But here's the really interesting thing, is Paul is able to celebrate their faith growing. Whose faith have you seen grow? Do you keep track of it? You know, oh, I shouldn't do that. No, I mean, I think you should be able to see faith growing in people. If somebody's been coming to Lawson Road for 5 years, I would hope that we can say, hey, their faith has grown in 5 years. If their faith hasn't grown, then shame on me and shame on you. Because we haven't provided an environment for that to happen. We haven't challenged people. We've encouraged them to stay in the boat rather than stepping out. And so faith is something that grows and something that we can participate in. So I want us just to think in closing here of an application. Okay? These words are all nice and good, but you're not going to take a quiz on that anytime soon. But think about how, as a next step, how this applies to your home. How is faith present in your home? How is your faith present in your marriage, for instance? So start with something simple as you think about it. Do you or can you talk about God together? Okay. Or is that just something you do to and from church on a Sunday? Do you pray together? Do you agree on God's definition of a successful marriage? Are you failing as you attempt to meet standards and expectations set by others? And those expectations may be high. You have higher expectations for your spouse than God does, or they may be the other way. You have lower expectations for yourself or for your spouse than God does. Do you trust each other? Do you trust that God can make your marriage work? And so if you're at a place where you're struggling, is going to God part of your solution to your marriage? Or is it like my marriage is here and my faith is here? Are you willing to give the other person room to grow? Are you willing to give them room to grow? And are you seeking to grow yourself? Because it makes a difference. If you expect your spouse to be the most perfect, absolute marriage partner, life partner, the moment you walk out of the chapel, still in your tux and your wedding dress, then you've already figured out by now that didn't happen. You married the wrong guy, you married the wrong girl, because they weren't everything you dreamed they would be. Are you willing to give them room to grow and time to grow? Or are you still holding to that expectation that they should be everything you ever dreamed they would be? Let me just switch gears a little bit. And I know both these examples sort of leave some people out this morning. But let me ask, how about as a parent? How much responsibility do you take for yourself? And how much do you give God? How much responsibility for your children is yours and how much is God's? Are you taking that's a heavy burden if that's all on you? Are you willing to risk giving your children to God? Or are you holding yourself totally responsible for whatever the outcome is? I think having children is like the biggest, riskiest thing you can do. I mean, nobody holds a little baby and thinks, oh yeah, this kid's going to be a UFC cage fighter. The outcome is so unknown. We just take such a big risk. You know, we have this path, this dream, this image of how our child will turn out. And we think that we can manage and control it. We do everything we can to manage and control it. But at some point, we run into risk or failure or weakness or fear, and we have to say, God, it's up to you. I can't do anything with this child. Well, I can do something, but you got to do a whole lot more than I can do. But as long as we fight that, As long as we say my faith is here and my children and my parenting is here and my favorite author is here and this video and whatever it is over here in terms of how to be a parent or how to be a husband or how to be a wife, and we don't connect those in our homes, then faith isn't really living out and living up to what it should be. Amen. And so what fears do you have about your children? Fears do you have about your children? And how often do you present those fears to God? So here's my summary question. What do you intentionally do to make faith a vital part of your home environment? If you look on the front of the bulletin, it has believe on there. And I think oftentimes we equate faith with belief. I think there's cause for that, reasons for that. Sometimes, I think believe is about information and knowledge, mostly. I mean, I talked last week how new converts are referred to as believers, okay? So there's a faith thing there. It's not just knowledge and information. But oftentimes, belief as knowledge and information is just one aspect of faith. And so if we say what I am doing to cultivate faith in my family and my children in my home is to provide information, that's great. That is a great beginning. But belief and knowledge and information by itself isn't faith. And so what are you doing intentionally to make faith a vital part of your home environment? What are you doing to grow your spouse's or your children's faith in God? And so is that next step. Can you make that list? Are there things you can say that you're doing, that you're trying, that you're acting to say, yes, we're trusting God more. We're making sure that faith is part of our lives. Over the next 6 weeks, we're going to start a new series that's called Unshackled Faith, okay, or Faith Unshackled. That's our theme for the year, and I got to hear and I realized I haven't really preached on that. So there's several elements we're going to do. The first 2 weeks we'll be answering very briefly, what are some things that we believe? Okay, because that's where faith begins. What do I believe? Second thing is, what should I do? And we'll spend 2 weeks just looking at two things there. What should I do? Then I think the third one is one that we often overlook, and it's 2 weeks, and that is, who am I becoming? Who am I becoming? So what do I believe, what should I do, and who am I becoming? And we'll spend time digging into that more. But I think overall, that's going to explore, what is faith? How does it make a difference in my life? I've talked for a long time this morning. I appreciate your patience. And if your faith is struggling, if you've seen these words, heard these words, and you're saying that doesn't really describe my life, then can we encourage you to make some changes? Can we encourage you to grow, to stretch yourself? Maybe you need to learn something. Maybe you need to do something that is different from what you've been doing. Maybe you need to know Jesus in a more personal way. Whatever we can do to help and encourage you, please come as we sing and let me know about that.